Before we get started, if you've seen this, don't worry. We're not going to read all of these scriptures. These are just, I wanted to put down the scriptures that I use in putting what I'm going to speak about today, so that if you have questions like, well, where did he come up with that? Most of it down here, okay? We're just going to actually read a couple portions. So if anybody you know went home because of all of this, you can call them up. Tom, come on back. Well, it's no secret that I enjoy the old Western TV shows, particularly The Rifleman and Laramie. Lucas McCain and The Rifleman, Slim Sherman and Jess Harper and Laramie are just characters that you want to be like. I mean, they're not afraid to stand up to a fight. They believe in justice 100%. They won't back down from what's right. They stand up no matter what it means. And for doing that, they get a lot of bullets in them, which amazes me. I think Jess Harper's probably been shot 700 times, and he was still playing that series for several years. But they get beatings, they get in all kinds of situations because of this. And it just leaves you, you know, when you look around the world today and you watch something like that, see men that are really committed to doing what's right and helping others, it leaves you with a good feeling. Well, long before the advent of TV Western, there was an individual who lived that I'd like to talk about today, and who also is inspiring to all of us, should be, and that's the Apostle Paul. So I'd like to, we're going to continue in 2 Timothy. We're coming pretty much to the close here. Let's just open up and read in 2 Timothy verses, chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. Second Timothy 4, verse 6. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. And that's all the farther we'll go today. As we move on here through 2 Timothy, we're coming now to the concluding remarks of Paul's letter to Timothy. And he's pulled no punches in telling Timothy of the things that he's going to face and how to endure under dissension, persecution, and apostasy. In our verses today, Paul speaks of his past, present, future. And I'll show you how that is. But he does so by saying, I am already being poured out as a drink offering. The time of my departure has come. Here he's talking about what is presently going on with him right now. And to appreciate what Paul meant by being poured out as a drink offering, you would need to go back to the Old Testament to draw the connection, particularly Numbers 28 and 29. And you know what? I don't even know if I included that on my list. Oh, well, there's another one, Numbers 28 and 29. In these chapters, it gives instruction on what God calls my offering my food for my offering by fire of a soothing aroma to me. The drink offering was strong drink, or it was undiluted wine. That's what they mean by strong drink here. And in the scriptures, wine is used as a symbol for joy, used as a symbol for life, and it's also used as a symbol of blood. Jesus, when he observed the Passover meal, the last Passover meal with his disciples, he took the cup of wine, saying, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for forgiveness of sin." The burnt offerings in Numbers with the drink offering was a soothing aroma to God. When you read through Numbers 28 and 29, you will read of these different offerings, the bulls, the lambs, the meal offering, they're all burnt forms of the burnt offering, and the cup that was poured out, emptied. It always says it was a soothing aroma to God. And this is speaking of the joy God in the total, that the joy God had in his Son for his total obedience, even unto his death. You know, we read in Isaiah 53, it says, "Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him." Or in my translation, it says, "And it pleased the Lord to crush him." God received joy from the death of his Son because of what that death accomplished. Paul's life, after his conversion, was one of complete obedience to his Lord, which led him to a death which he could compare to the drink offering. He pleased his Lord and was about to enter into the presence of him with joy and the acclamation of, "Well done, good and faithful servant." His life was one of obedience, one of to his Lord until the end. And Paul goes on to say, after he compares himself to the drink offering, says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith." Well, from this man, and I want to focus on Paul today, from this man who called himself the least of all the apostles, the least of all the saints, and the chief of sinners, we see a remarkable life and transformation which God used for his glory. The first mention of him is in Acts 7:58, at the stoning of Stephen. Here he is referred to as a young man, probably in his late 20s, maybe early 30s. Secular historians place his birth around 6 A.D. We find in Acts 22:1-3 that he was born in Tarsus of Cilicia, which made him a Roman citizen because it was a Roman province. So he was a Hebrew born in Cilicia. So he was also a Roman citizen because of his birth. A few years later, his family moved to Jerusalem, and he was placed under the teaching of Gamaliel. Gamaliel was a Pharisee, doctor of Jewish law, who was held in great esteem by all Jews. There probably wasn't a greater teacher in all of Jerusalem, if in all of the known world at that time, than Gamaliel, and Paul was placed under his teaching. How that happened, we have no record. Some have thought that maybe it was due to his parents may have been wealthy and were able to afford to do this, but however it happened, we do know that it was the providence of God that actually did all of this. Gamaliel holds the reputation of, like I said, being one of the teachers in all the annals of Judaism. He taught Paul strictly according to the law, which as a Pharisee, and Paul was a Pharisee, zealously followed. The Talmud describes Gamaliel as teaching a student who displayed impudence in learning, implying a contentious or cocky boldness. Some have concluded this to be Paul. I can see that. But that's not there was never no mention of the name. But in Galatians chapter 1, 13 through 14, Paul does say that he was advancing in Judaism beyond many of his peers and was much more zealous for his ancestral traditions than they. Cockiness? Well, I'd like to think of it as the expression Walter Brennan used to say in his show, The Guns of Will Sonnet. Okay, another Western. The only thing I remember from that show was Will Sonnet riding up on a ridge with his two sons beside him. And there were four men facing him and said, you're not going to get through here. We're going to mow you down. And Will, Walter Brennan, looks at him and says, well, I hate to spoil your party, but my boys are going to ride through. And if it has to be at the death of you four, let it be so. And then he concludes by saying, no brag, just fact. Well, that's what Paul was saying here. He was giving the facts that he was more zealous and was way beyond the learning of all those who were under Gamaliel at the time. He was just soaking in the law and became a very zealous Pharisee because of that. He was called both Saul and Paul. We know that from the scriptures. Saul was his Hebrew name, and Paul was his Roman name. As a middle-aged and beyond man, his appearance was said to be, by himself, unimpressive, which was much kinder than how some early historians described him. If you go back into some first century historians, just imagine you wanted to put a dating profile out there, as so many do today, and this is how it would read. I am a man of small stature, with a bald head. Legs are a little crooked, with knees far apart. Large eyes, eyebrows which meet, that look like a caterpillar up there, and a nose somewhat long and hooked. Well, I don't know how many calls you get, but that's how two different historians had described his appearance. He had learned the trade of tent making, which he sometimes used to support himself when he was on his missionary journey. Paul, in both pre-conversion and after, was a force to be reckoned with. Think of that. Before his conversion and after his conversion, he was a force to be reckoned with. As a Pharisee, he was furiously enraged by believers in Jesus. And that's what the scriptures say. Furiously enraged. I almost visioned someone so upset and mad that spits flying out of their mouths and lightning bolts from their eyes. That was how he was for his Christian believer as a Pharisee. He made it his mission to seek them out, both men and women, and to try to force them to blaspheme Jesus. I watched a movie, I don't know, a few months back. It's a fairly recent one, and it was about these two missionaries that went to Japan to find a missionary that no one had heard of. or had heard from for many years. And these two young missionaries went there, and it was about Catholic missionaries. They were, I believe, Jesuit monks or whatever. But it showed at the time the persecution of believers there, and they would they didn't want to kill people. All they wanted them to do was to blaspheme the name of Jesus, and they would put a crucifix or a cross down on the ground, and they would get everybody in the village. They'd have to come up, and they would have to say something terrible about Jesus, and then stomp on the cross. Those who didn't were either beheaded right on the spot in front of everybody, or they had a torture where they dug pits, and they hung them upside down, all the way submerged in these pits where rats were. And rats would be gnawing on them, and they would say, "Will you blaspheme Jesus now?" And if they would, they would bring them up. Many started blaspheming the name of Jesus without really meaning it, saved themselves from a horrible death. And it's a remarkable movie. It's based on a true story. I don't even know what the name of it, but Liam Neeson is in it. That's all I can tell you. Look up Liam Neeson, missionary. But that's what Paul was doing. He was trying to force believers, Jesus, to blaspheme his name. He consented to their death and dragged them from their homes and cities to put them in prison. He was no different than these Japanese over here back then who were doing the same thing. He was feared by many. Little short bald-headed guy. Probably wasn't bald-headed at the time, but he was feared by many and seemed unstoppable, but we know otherwise. God had other plans for him, didn't he? On that road to Damascus to carry out his mission, Jesus, the Christ, stopped him. In an instant, he went from furiously bent on destroying Christianity to becoming one of its most prominent defenders of the faith. Like, remarkable to read about that to me in Acts chapter 9. Instead of, it was like 3 days he was blind, and Ananias went there and told him the Lord had for him, and the scales fell off his eyes. And it says, after that, immediately he began proclaiming Jesus as the Son of God in the synagogue. Now, he was confounding the Jews in Damascus, where he was going to arrest the Christians, by proving from the scriptures that Jesus is the Christ. Is there any better man that the Lord could have picked to do that job? If anybody knew the Old Testament scriptures better than Paul, it might have been Gamaliel. But Paul knew scriptures. And when Christ opened his eyes to see the truth, he started using those scriptures to show the Jew that, whoa, this Jesus is what's talked about here. This is the Christ. And he never stopped from there. He started traveling to proclaim Christ, first to the Jews and then the Gentiles. His travels took him to at least 50 cities and logging some 13,000 miles. Now, 13,000 miles back then, I don't even think they had little pedal scooters. You either walked, you either went on a ship, or you rode on a donkey. But it's interesting to note that as we read through these things, that that Paul was the only man that we have in the scriptures that was taught by two of the greatest teachers of his time, Gamaliel and those were his teachers. He learned the law from Gamaliel, and then he learned truth about Christ from Christ while he was in Arabia for 3 years. As a believer and apostle to the Gentiles, he sustained numerous whippings, beatings with rods. He was stoned. He was in 3 shipwrecks, where in one he spent a whole day and a whole night in the sea. That'd be a scary thing. His life was one filled with dangers of every type. Drownings, robbers, wild beasts, dangers from his own countrymen, Gentiles, and false brethren. Then there were the imprisonment, the last of where we find him now, in prison, the Mamertine prison, a small cave, as we've already talked about quite a while back, where you're lowered into, and there's no really light coming in, damp, dark, except for candlelight. And he comes to the end of his life, facing it, and he says, I have finished the course. I have fought the good fight. I have kept the faith. Wow. Is there any better example for us to follow other than the Lord himself? In fact, Paul said, follow my example, more than once in his writing. Follow my example as I follow the Lord. Paul was not saying, at least I don't believe he was saying, that we are all to travel the world preaching the gospel as missionaries and living the exact same life he did. But I believe what he was saying, which speaks to me as I was reading this, that as we live out our lives in whatever occupation or circumstance we may be found in, we do so unto the Lord. Every day, unwavering, until the end, to the glory of God. That's what I believe we're all called. That's some of what Greg was talking about Sunday school morning. It's not a one-time confession or profession, and then our lives have not changed at all. Our lives, no matter what we're doing, whether we're in retirement like I am, whether we're working to a frazzle like Greg Kimmel and others in here, we're to do so to the glory of God. That's what Paul did. He never wavered from it. He stayed. He said he finished the course. To fight the good fight is to be aware of the battle we're in. And we've talked a lot about that battle from up here and down here in Sunday school. Pastor Greg has talked about that battle too. And it's a spiritual battle, isn't it? It says in Ephesians, we're not up against flesh and blood, but against spiritual darkness, against spiritual power, with powerful unseen enemies. Paul reminds us over and over in his writings of the things we will face in our lives as Christians. I always, when I read that and say that, this is my secular mind coming out. I beg your pardon, I didn't promise you a rose garden. It really isn't down here. We live in a relativistic world where everyone, like I said in Sunday school, wants to believe that whatever you do is acceptable and good. There is no absolute truth. And they promote this. That, now think about it. They'll come up to you and they'll say, there is no right or wrong. There is no absolute truth. Well, just by stating there is no absolute truth, you've just said an absolute truth. So they're a little confounded at that, but we're in a battle. And Paul reminds us that we will face trials, we'll face difficulties in our lives as Christians. He knows firsthand, doesn't he? of the dangers and battles. It's not like he's one talking about these dangers and these battles and these trials of a man who never experienced anything, who just sat in his home all day and wrote. No, he was out there. We said 13,000 miles he traveled in the wilds, often at times. But he also, as he experienced this, he also tells us not to give up. He tells us to put on the whole armor of God and move forward. That's the course. We just went through a very profitable, I thought, a very profitable study of this, Pastor Greg, in Ephesians 6. And if any of you missed any of that, I would recommend going to our website and listening to what parts you may have missed, describing the armor of God and what that and how that applies to us today. Fight the good fight. Paul also compares his life to that of running a race. And Greg was bringing athletics in this morning. He's not doing nothing new. Paul was bringing athletics in back in the first century. He compares his life to that of running a race. In doing so, there is a course to follow, is what he's saying, which has dangers of its own, but to deviate from that course would present far more danger than to stay on it. I think it was maybe 4 years ago, two of my brothers and a cousin entered in a 50-mile race through hell. Good name. It was in Hell, Michigan. Okay. But it was a 50-mile race. None of them had ever done a 50-mile race. And the day, it was in September, it happened to be a day, you remember yesterday? That's kind of day. It was raining. The race started 6 in the morning. It was dark out and ended when the last person arrived at the finish line, which was a long time to come. But I was there to provide for their needs at various checkpoints. If they did not stay on the course, they would almost certainly be lost because there's many, many, many acres of woods up there that this course went through. And of course, there'd be many dangers to face too. But even staying on that course was treacherous, with many dropping out before completing this. Those who did complete it, because I stood at the finish line, they did so with various injuries that they sustained while running the course. One man broke a leg. I don't know how many I seen coming in limping that were doing that at the halfway point. They had to go up a hill that literally was just mud because of the rain. They had to run down a river. Everything was a well laid out course, but there were roots. Your feet would never be flat. You'd be slipping and falling. And my cousin's wife looks at me and says, "And they say this is healthy?" See, guys were bleeding. And my brother, my one brother came in, my cousin came in, and then we're waiting for my other brother, Tom. Some of you have met him. He's been here. He was the police officer. He nearly lost his life training for this race back in the summer, literally. But we're waiting for Tom. Where's Tom? Everybody's in. Where's Tom? So I decide to backtrack. And I'm going the trail, and I thought, well, it's getting dark now. It's starting to get dark. I don't have a flashlight. How long am I going to go before I can't find him? And then I hear some voice. And here he comes around the corner. And he's got a man half his age who can hardly walk. He's holding him up. And they're both limping. "Brother, how far is it to go?" He says, "You got about 2 more miles. "You sure that's all?" "Yeah." So I walked with him. And you come over a rise, and probably a quarter mile down, you see the finish line. and they were already dismantling everything. Somebody yells, "Look, there's two more runners coming." And everybody stopped what they were doing, and they all huddled around the finish line, and they started cheering them. And here they come. And they cross the finish line 12 hours later. They stayed on the course, though, but they suffered injuries doing so. Paul knew he would face persecutions, trials, even death, yet he stayed on course. He bore the marks on his body of the physical sufferings he endured, not to mention the mental sufferings. But nothing caused him to deviate from that course, because I have finished the course. Jesus Christ had prepared for him to follow, so he could confidently proclaim, "I have kept the faith." And know that by doing so, there is great reward waiting for him in the future. We're going to talk more about that next week, as we call it part two, part one this week. As we finish, we'll finish up with verse 8 next week. But for now, let's consider each of us individually our faith and how we are living out that faith. What precious words to hear once this life is over and we go to be with the Lord. "Well done, good and faithful servant." Wouldn't that be a precious thing to hear? Finishing a little bit early today, we'll see with all of those scriptures listed, or even finishing early. But I'd like us to close by all turning to Matthew 25 and reading some familiar verses, but some verses we need to be reminded of. Matthew 25, and we'll begin in verse 14. "For it is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own servants and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and he went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents, he gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Also the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, "Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one also who had received the 1 talent came up and said, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours." He might as well have just said there, "I was afraid and did absolutely nothing with my life." "But his master answered and said to him, 'You wicked, lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore take away the talent from him, and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. but from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave to the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping, gnashing of Paul did not have to face the fate of that last man. Paul said with confidence that I have finished the course, that I have fought the good fight, that I have kept the faith. And I pray that each of us will be able to say the same thing when our lives are ended. Don't know when that'll be, but that means that today, if we haven't been, today should be the day we start living for the glory of God in whatever we're doing. Bringing him praise and honor, submitting to his obedience, and what a joy there will be doing that. Although sometimes it seems like a real trial here, and I can empathize with so many of you. So let's close prayer as our music comes up for a closing.